desert island dinner. Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you, assuming, of course, that you also had a gramophone? As usual, the week's castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? On our desert island this week is an American singer who's currently one of the most popular artists in the world. He's a star not only of the concert hall, cabaret, and records, but also of films. You'll remember him in Carmen Jones and Island in the Sun. I'm happy to welcome ashore as our castaway, Harry Belafonte. Well, Harry, an island in the sun should be a familiar location to you, but this particular island, I'm afraid, is quite deserted. You'll be alone. How does the idea of that loneliness strike you?
Well, I don't think that it's something that I would want to have for too long a period, but with the hectic pressures of my popular life as an artist, I would look a bit forward to being cast away on a desert island to be quiet for a few weeks.
Just for a few weeks? After that?
Maybe a few days. I don't know what I'm saying.
How much do you play the gramophone? In the last few years, you've made very many successful records yourself. Apart from that, do you have a big collection?
Oh, yes, an enormous collection of recordings and tapes as well. Much of the work that I do in the research of songs and material is done by listening to recordings from all over the world by other artists, and predominantly in the folk field.
Yes.
So I have an enormous collection.
Well, from that enormous collection, you can have just 8, I'm afraid, as your only link with home. How have you gone about choosing them?
Well, I kind of examined them on 2 levels. One is the fantasy that a man would have, being cast away on a desert island all alone. And the other is based on the things that he would miss most of all, being away from home.
All right. Let's get down to cases. What's your first record?
The very first recording is by Lena Horne. And it's called Baby, Won't You Please Come Home?
That's a very apt title. Why do you choose Miss Horne?
First of all, she's very beautiful. Very talented, and I know Lena, and she's just very gracious and very sweet.
Let's hear her.
Baby, won't you please come home? 'Cause your baby's all alone. I have tried in vain. Never no more to call your name. When you left, you broke my heart. But that should never keep us apart.
Lovely Lena Horne singing, Baby, Won't You Please Come Home. What's your next choice, Harry?
My next choice is also by another girl singer, an American, by the name of Jerry Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Very soft, very soothing voice, and very pleasant to be with. Jerry Seven singing, You Forgot Your Gloves.
You forgot your gloves when you kissed me and said goodnight. So I've brought them, you see, but don't thank me, it's quite all right. You forgot your gloves, and I hope you appreciate. I'm not honest at all, it's just a stall for one more day. What a souvenir to see.
The voice of Jerry Sutton. Harry, although you spent quite a lot of your childhood in Jamaica and in the West Indies, you are an American by birth, aren't you?
Yes, I was born in New York City, but both my parents are from the West Indies.
So you're a British stock?
Yes, I am.
We can almost claim you. Were either of your parents musical?
No more than I think average parents, you know. They're churchgoers and sang hymns all the time, but not predominantly.
Mm. What was it your ambition to be when you were a little boy?
Well, as all little boys, I had many, many ambitions, but I think the most burning of all was to be a jockey.
And, what went wrong with that, apart from the fact that you grew to over 6 foot?
Well, that's what happened. I'm now 6'2", and there are very few horses that can carry me.
Mm-hmm. What did you do when you left school?
When I left school, in the West Indies, I went to America and went to school there, and out of school in America, I went into the United States Navy, and I was there for 2 years.
Yes.
And it was during the Second World War. And after coming out of the Navy, I then embarked on further studies, but this time in the theater.
Mm-hmm. What gave you the bug to get into the theater?
I think it was because I found that it was a medium that fascinated me. I loved the idea of make-believe in a way, but mainly it gave me an opportunity for expression, self-expression.
Yes.
And it fulfilled all of my creative desires.
Where did you study?
Well, I studied many places, but I got my start in a place called the American Negro Theater in New York.
Yes. What did you play?
Well, we did all kinds of plays. The very first one that I ever did was Sean O'Casey's Dinner in the Paycot, which was a bit of summer stock. And then after that, we did all of the masters. We did Shakespeare, and then we did a little bit of Arthur Miller, and George Bernard Shaw, Gorky.
We see many fine Negro actors in the theater and in films. We don't hear much about Negro playwrights.
I think that in all the fields of the arts, probably one of the weakest, as far as Negro representation is concerned, at least in America, is in the field of playwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Although there have been some authors, like Langston Hughes,
yes,
who's very popular, who's written for the theater and mm-hmm. things produced. But there's not a great abundance of them because prior to this, the opportunities were not many. And now, though, we find that we're finding more and more writers coming to the fore, and that we'll be getting more and more television plays and scenarios, and as well as plays by Negro writers.
Fine. Well, having got you started in the theater, I think this is a point where we might break off and have record number three.
Well, I'm a great, great jazz enthusiast, and I think I love that almost more than any other single kind of music. And being cast away on a desert island, I'd be very lonely and feeling very blue. I think that would fit that mood best of all would be the modern jazz quartet playing bluesology.
American Negro Theater, what was the next step?
The very next step, then, was that the American Theater served as a kind of workshop center. But then I found the necessity for academic study in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I went to a school in New York called the New School of Social Research and the drama division of that school called the Dramatic Workshop.
Yes. Is that Lee Strasberg?
No. Lee Strasberg is now the Actor's Studio. Uh-huh. But this preceded the Actor's Studio, and Lee Strasberg taught at the drama workshop before he developed his own school.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed in the workshop for a good number of years, and studying mainly to be an actor. And then what happened was that we started to do musical productions in the school as well, original, review-type things. And I performed in one in school, never really with any ambition to be a singer. And after getting out of school and finding it very difficult to get work in the theater, oddly enough, someone who'd seen me in the production at school... by the name of Monty Kay, who owned a jazz nightclub in New York at that time called the Royal Roost. I met him while I was visiting the Roost one night, listening to the jazz musicians there. And he asked me, what was I doing? I told him things were very difficult. And then he recommended that I try singing. And I said, well, I wasn't cut out to be a singer. And he said, well, just for laughs. So I just came in one night. So for laughs, I went in, and I laughed myself out into a career.
What, were you singing pops in those?
Yes, I was singing purely pop music, and I was doing financially very well with it and moving along, but I found it very dissatisfying. I found that I couldn't find great dimension in the music. The sources are very limiting. It was always the same subject matter, you know.
Mm.
Darling, I love you, but you don't love me. Will you love me tomorrow if I love you yesterday? And then you did them all at different tempos, which was just about the only change. And there are many artists who do it and do it quite well. But for myself personally, I found it not fulfilling at all.
Mm.
And I felt that if I'd gone any further as a pop singer, that I'd become so entrenched in it that I'd never be able to leave. And that while I still had my youth and the capacity to break away, I broke away from it and opened a restaurant down in Greenwich Village. Really in the art colony of New York. And everybody used to come in and, you know, poor boy here. You know, he didn't quite make it. Now he's here in a restaurant having... And I did the cooking in the restaurant.
Yes.
And the restaurant lasted for 8 months. And I always say that we spend too much time discussing the mistakes in the life of George Bernard Shaw instead of dealing with the customers. But I then came back into the business singing, this time folk music. And much of the influence for me doing that was out of this restaurant because so many folk artists would come in and take over a corner of the restaurant and start singing, and I saw great beauty and great strength in folk music.
Yes. And you sing songs, folk songs from all over the world?
All over the world, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we've really got you established in your present career, I think it's another place to break off and hear some more music. What's number four?
Well, in talking about folk music and all, someone who's been an enormous influence in my life, and I know her very well, and I feel very dearly about her, and she's a great artist, Miss Mahalia Jackson, who's our greatest spiritual singer in America, and she's going to sing Didn't It Rain, which is probably what I'd need more than anything else on a desert island.
Mahalia Jackson singing, Didn't It Rain? Well, Harry, getting back to your career, you very quickly met an enormous success with your folk singing. That took you to Hollywood, didn't it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was working at the Blue Angel, a nightclub in New York at the time, and the talent scouts from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer came in one night and saw me perform and asked me if I'd do a screen test for a picture called Bright Road.
Mm.
And I did the screen test and I got the part.
And then you did that wonderful film, Carmen Jones?
Yes, oh, well, right after that, I did my first, from that, I went to my first musical play in Broadway, which was with Hermione Gingo.
Oh, bless her.
And Billy DeWolf.
Yes.
There was a musical review called John Murray Anderson's Almanac. And out of that, I was taken up by Otto Preminger to do Carmen Jones.
Mm-hmm. Have you done many Broadway musical plays?
No, I've done two. One was John Murray Anderson's Almanac, and the other was called Three for Tonight with Marge and Gower Champion. And
yeah.
Charles Lawton helped stage that show.
Mm-hmm.
After that picture, we did the last one, which is released here, called Island in the Sun.
Yes. Well, now you have your own film production company. You can choose your own story.
Yes.
What have you chosen?
As a matter of fact, I'd like to say that, you know, the reason for the company is specifically that. It gives you an opportunity for greater artistic choice, or more personal artistic choice. And so far, I've finished one picture for MGM, which is to be distributed by MGM, and it's called End of the World. I did that with Miss Inga Stevens and Mr. Mel Ferrer.
Mm.
And we're the only three characters left in the world after a Holocaust. And the second film is one called Odds Against Tomorrow, which is a thriller. And then there's another which we're doing called The Life of Alexander Pushkin, which is the story of Pushkin, the great Russian author.
How many of those have you made?
We've only made one so far. Mm. And we're starting the next one on the 1st of November.
Yes. This is your first visit to Britain, isn't it?
Yes, my very first.
Have you brought your family?
Yes, my wife is here. My son is here. Actually, this is my first visit, yes, because the last time I was here, I was just here for 8 days, and it was all work out at Elm Street. And that was about almost 2 years ago.
Well, that was on Island in the Sun.
That's right.
You finished it here.
Yes, but I came in and got out so fast that all I saw was the fog.
Have you had a chance to look around at that?
Oh, yes. And also, you know, to perform for the people of Britain has been an enormous, enormous experience. It really has. And totally overwhelming, really.
Well, that's nice to hear. Let's have record number five.
Another music that I find terribly exciting, and almost as exciting as jazz, and I guess it would be as exciting to me if I knew more about it in its detail or grown up with it, and that's flamenco music. An artist whom I've seen perform, and I think is really one of the great performers in the world, Carmen Amaya, doing flamenco, and she's doing Sevillana.
Amaya with her company in Sevillanas. And what next?
Well, next, I think something that's been very near and very dear to me for a long time. The classical field, Hyacinth, and the Brahms Violin Concerto.
Yes. I'm afraid you can't have the whole work, Harry. Which part of it?
Let's do part of the third movement. Thank you.
we'll have time for of the Brahms Violin Concerto. Annie, an essential part of this program is to find out just how good a castaway you'd be on this island. How well could you look after yourself? Are you good with your hands? Could you build somewhere to live?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I think that the only thing I'd take out of my luggage was my copy of Robinson Crusoe. And,
you wouldn't have any luggage, I'm afraid. You'll have to remember it.
Oh, well, I'll have to read up to remember. But I think I'd do pretty well.
Mm-hmm. I don't have to ask you if you can cook because you kept Greenwich Village gastronomically happy for 8 months. Can you fish?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I do a lot of line fishing, snorkel fishing.
Any other skills or hobbies that might be useful?
Yes, I think that I like the good green earth, the good brown earth, and I like good green vegetables, so I guess I can do a bit of farming.
Fine. Well, we don't have to worry about you on this island at all. Let's have record number 7.
Record number 7? I think about this point I'd begin to wish I was back in America, back in New York City, back listening to jazz, and a contemporary in America, a young fellow by the name of Joe Williams, who sings as Count Basie. And if I was with him, I'd want to hear him sing smack dab in the middle.
Pick me a town in any clime where people like a rockin' time and stay awake both day and night. Everybody's feeling good and right. Then throw me smack dab in the middle. Pistol me smack dab in the middle. Dunk me smack dab in the middle. Now let me rock and roll and satisfy my time.
And now we come to your last one. What have we got here?
Well, while I'd be on this desert island, I know I'd think of my family and I'd think of my children. And I think of times that I've sung to them. And I think in this part, I think of Scarlet Ribbons.
You're on this.
That's
fine. Let's hear it.
I peeked in to say goodnight. Then I heard my child in prayer, and for me some scarlet ribbons for my hair.
Well, there we are. There's your 8 records, Harry. You've still got one more choice to make. Every castaway is allowed to take just one luxury on the island. What have you chosen to take?
Well, something that I just saw on my visit to Italy. In the city of Florence, I think I'd like to take Michelangelo's statue of David.
All right, we'll arrange it. We might have difficulty arranging it, but we'll arrange it. It'll be there.
All right.
Well, Harry, this is your first visit here. We hope you felt at home and enjoyed it enough to want to come back and see us very often in the future.
Thank you very much, Roy.
And thank you for letting us hear your choice of desert island disc.
My pleasure.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
The guest in today's recorded program was Harry Belafonte, the interviewer Roy Plumley, and the producer Monica Chapman.